on the left, it's more Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Okay, maybe rather than a volcano of oil, we'll call it a geyser. That's what Ron says I should do. All right, a geyser of oil. But when I use the term volcano, I don't mean... Oh, I'm not going to say it all again. Anyway, I think you get the point. Tony in Maine has been combing all sorts of news sources each day and sending me a synopsis of how the disaster in the Gulf is being reported. And I want to do that when we come back, share with you what he put together today when we come back from the break at the top of the hour. If you watched any of C-SPAN today, and believe it or not, I think it was on C-SPAN, the Senate side, not the entire hearing, the one in D.C. There were two hearings, one in D.C. and one in, I think, Lafayette, Louisiana. Was it in Lafayette? But if you watched any of it, like I did, you saw the refusal of any of these slimy capitalist talking heads. Not one of them sat there and took the kind of responsibility that that you would expect an honorable person to take. Now, I realize there's not, as far as I'm concerned, there's not a corporate head in America who is honorable or believes in justice or proper behavior. If they were honorable or did believe in justice or were ethical, they would not be the head of a corporation. You understand? It's prima facie evidence that a CEO of a corporation has no honor. None. None whatsoever. I don't care how much they contribute to the local ballet company or the local art museum. They have no honor, no decency whatsoever. And I'll give you a first-class example of that when we, a little bit later in the program, if you, as though you needed one. But it's been 3 weeks since that rig exploded. 11 people are dead. The ruptured well is still gushing crude oil uncontrollably. And if you watched the hearing today, you saw our esteemed senators, I didn't see the one in Lafayette, Louisiana, but our esteemed senators sitting there shocked, shocked, I tell you, that such a thing could occur. What do these people use for brains? What the hell do they have between their ears, these lawmakers? I especially found it interesting to watch Mary Landrieu, who is the senator from the most oil-drenched state in the country, Louisiana. Mary Landrieu is an absolute... I want to say whore for the oil industry, but I don't want to piss off the female listeners. So what could I call her? She's a shill for the oil industry. Mary Landrieu will do anything that the oil industry tells her to do because her state is just a polluted, disgusting, nasty pigsty that is dumping untreated waste. I realize it comes from Middle America down the Mississippi. But Mary Landrieu couldn't care less. All this untreated garbage and crap and pollutants and death and bacteria into the Gulf of Mexico. Forget the oil spill. How big is the dead zone that spreads out, the literal dead zone that spreads out from the Mississippi Delta? So here's Mary Landrieu trying to put a look of shock. Shock, I tell you, on her face as she sits there questioning the BP executives and the Halliburton and the Transocean who own this this Deepwater Horizon. But I digress. Mary Landrieu is just doing what she is supposed to do. Mary Landrieu does what the oil companies tell her to do. In that respect, she is not unlike any other senator who has any connection whatsoever with the oil companies. So, and I'm talking about in terms of money. So Mary Landrieu is, you know, she's no better, certainly a little bit worse than the rest of these slime balls who work for the corporations and present themselves as U.S. senators who are ostensibly working for us. Right. But all you got, if you listen to these hearings today, was finger pointing and buck passing. I'd like to give some finger pointing to these people. But, you know, if I were to do that, in the Senate hearing room, yeah, you know, I'm raising my middle finger. You know, I'd be run out. The chairman of the committee would say, hey, get out. As a matter of fact, at the hearing, it was in Kenner, Louisiana, not Lafayette. At the hearing in Kenner, which was conducted by the United States Coast Guard and the Minerals Management Services, they had testimony from fire and rescue workers who were on the scene at the burning rig. And they were there to talk about what went right, what went wrong, so on and so forth. But before the public hearing down there got underway, protesters tried to disrupt it, bless your hearts, demanding a complete halt to offshore drilling and saying that the hearing was not a legitimate forum because it did not give the general public an opportunity to be heard. General public. That would be us, right? One protester who said, we need a different system. And the MMS should not be trusted, held a banner that read, Gulf oil spill, system, not fit caretaker of our planet. And he's referring to the Mineral Management Service, which critics say has an inherent conflict of interest because they're responsible for inspecting rigs and enforcing regulations at the same time collecting fees and royalties from these rapacious, filthy, disgusting oil corporations. We'll be back with an overlook, thanks to Tony from Maine, about what's going on in the oil business. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. To share with you what Tony in Maine put together. And what he does here is check all sorts of media that is not considered necessarily corporate media or the mainstream media to get these reports. And this is what he writes. Mike, try my best to find some truthful reporting on what's going on in the Gulf as of today, May 11th. We have now seen this disaster go on for 3 weeks, and for some reason, finding real facts is becoming harder and harder. But here goes. And I think his first source here is naturalnews.com. Reports about the massive Gulf of Mexico spill have been largely underestimated, according to commentators, including Paul Noel, or Noel, a software engineer for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal in Alabama. Let me digress. He was the guy whose article I read, remember, Kathy, last week, that freaked everybody out? Back to Tony. He, Paul Knoll believes that the pocket of oil that's been hit is so powerful and under so much pressure that it may be virtually impossible to contain it. And Knoll is not the only person questioning the scope of this disaster. A recent story from the Christian Science Monitor reports that many independent scientists believe the leak is spewing far more than the 5,000 barrels or 210,000 gallons per day being reported by most media sources. They, independent scientists, believe the leak could be discharging up to 25,000 barrels, more than a million gallons of crude a day right now. The riser pipe that was bent and crimped after the oil rig sank is restricting some of the flow from the tapped oil pocket. But as the leaking oil rushes into the well's riser, it is forcing sand with it at very high speeds and sandblasting the pipe, which is quickly eroding its structural integrity. According to a leaked National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration memo obtained by an Alabama newspaper, if the riser erodes any further and creates more leaks, up to 50,000 barrels or 2.1 million gallons per day of crude oil could begin flooding Gulf waters every day. When this disaster first occurred, the media downplayed it. BP spokespersons were quick to claim that the leakage was minimal and that crews would eventually be able to contain it. But as time went on, it became clear that things were not under control and that the spill was far more serious than we were originally told. Gee, sound familiar? Remember Katrina? Yet some of the media reports still seem more like press releases than actual reporting because they continue to repeat what the public relations cleanup crews would like the public to believe rather than what's actually happening. Reality, it seems, has a nasty habit of interfering with corporate spin. Yeah, and I saw something, was it last night, some BP corporate video. And BP is controlling this entire story. And that's the reason naturalnews.com is reporting what it's reporting that Tony sent to us. BP has a death lock on what is getting out to the media. And I saw this video that I don't think BP wanted released, or it's the only thing they want to release. And it wasn't mercury or anything, but it was, you could see this oil spill. It was down where they were trying to cap one of the leaks or something. And news organizations, I heard, have been clamoring for more video, if nothing else, to get independent sourcing a video from what's going on 5,000 feet down. And, of course, BP will have none of it. And this filthy goddamn corporation determines what we see on television. And the pigs and the whores that sit behind these desks on network and cable television, they do exactly what they're told. You don't see any independent reporting here. Whatever BP feeds up through the system, that's what you and I are going to hear. Bastards. Now, Tony then includes the second report, reasons why this oil disaster has happened at the worst possible time. Well, first of all, it's the breeding season for invertebrates, sea turtles, birds. All of these groups will be facing the brunt of the spill just as they are laying eggs or caring for them in important wildlife areas. Next, the trans-Gulf migration season. Southeast Regional Chief for Migratory Birds for MMS, David Viker, said, "We're near the peak of the trans-Gulf migration. Tens of millions of tiny feathered birds that could fit in your hand are making the jump from South America to North America and are exhausted upon arrival." Next is hurricane season. A big storm could complicate recovery and cleanup efforts and spread oil throughout the Gulf. NOAA, National Oceanic, yada yada, and others are predicting a particularly rough year for Atlantic storms, with Colorado State University's respected Bill Gray forecasting 15 named storms and 4 major hurricanes. The first part of June is the official start of hurricane season. Oh, I thought it was May. first part of June. But the storms may come sooner. No hurricanes have hit the United States in May, but 18 tropical storms have formed in the Pacific this month. A spokesman from Texas Tech University in Lubbock, environmentalist there, said, quote, "We get a hurricane in here in the next month, and that completely complicates the paradigm." He says one drop of oil on an egg can kill young invertebrates. One drop. Jesus, God. Also, La Nina. Moderate El Nino conditions are expected to dissipate by June. That phenomenon, which means warmer Pacific waters, creates so-called wind shear in the Atlantic that helps break up hurricanes as they form. So without El Nino, June storms might be more likely to form. In its place, say several climate models, is a La Nina period, in which means warmer temperatures in the southern areas of the United States and generally more powerful storms. Getting scared? All right, the third one that Tony researched today. BP told Congress today its massive Gulf oil spill was caused by the failure of a key safety device made by another company, Transocean. In turn, that company says BP was in charge and that a third company, Halliburton, that poured concrete to plug the exploratory well didn't do it right. The third company, which was plugging the well in anticipation of future production, says it was only following BP's plan. And that's what we were talking about early. The blame game shot into the open as the Senate began the hearing in the oil spill. But there's also something. This was not a producing well, I don't believe. This was an exploratory well. And apparently, BP was going to cap it and come back later. It was not a well that was going into production to be loaded into whatever they loaded into, tankers? I don't know. They were checking to see, I guess, how big this reserve was, how far down they needed to go to really suck this sucker dry, and that's when this egregious screw-up occurred. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Twenty-one past the hour. Back to what Tony in Maine researched today. All the picking up articles from the Global Press that. That aren't being influenced by corporate U.S. media. Anyway, a top executive of BP, oh my God, which leased the rig for exploratory drilling focused on a critical safety device that was supposed to shut off oil flow on the ocean floor in the event of a well blowout. But this valve, quote, failed to operate, end quote. Lamar McKay, chairman of BP America, said, quote, "That was to be the failsafe in case of an accident." He pointedly noted that the 450-ton blowout protector as well as the rig itself, was owned by Transocean Limited. Of the 126 people on the Deepwater Horizon rig when it was engulfed in flames, only seven were BP employees, according to McKay. But Transocean CEO Steve Newman was seeking to put responsibility back on BP. Newman also cites a third company, Halliburton, which as a subcontractor was encasing the well pipe in cement before plugging it, a process dictated by BP's drilling plan. A Halliburton executive, Tim Probert, planned to assert that the company's work was finished, quote, in accordance with the requirements, end quote, set out by BP and with accepted industry practices. This guy, the Halliburton guy, says pressure tests were conducted after the cementing work was finished to demonstrate well integrity. BP and Transocean are conducting separate investigations into what went wrong. Yeah, I'll bet. Source of that is the newstribune.com. Next, at the site of the ruptured well, a mile underwater, a remote-controlled submarine shot chemicals into the maw of the massive leak to dilute the flow. Further evidence that BP expects the gusher to keep erupting into the Gulf for weeks or more. Crews using the deep sea robot attempted to thin the oil after getting approval from the Environmental Protection Agency, according to BP officials. Two previous tests were done to determine the potential impact on the environment, and the third round of spraying was to last until early Tuesday. Excuse me. The EPA said the effects of the chemicals were still widely unknown. Widely unknown. Oh, good. The chemicals, which are intended to thin out the oil, contain harmful toxins of their own. Their exact makeup is kept secret. It's a secret. But they do contain a compound, quote, associated with headaches, vomiting, and reproductive problems at high doses, end quote. Huh? They're also called dispersants for a reason. The chemicals break up the oil and then disperse it. So instead of having the oil collect at the surface, dispersed droplets of oil can spread more quickly and in more directions. This means the droplets linger longer in the water, collecting on the seabed, and harming the ecosystem offshore. But it doesn't look bad on TV. That's according to Huffington Post. Next, cutting the riser pipe. Another option would be to cut the riser pipe. That's the long pipe that was attached to both the rig on the surface and the wellhead at the bottom of the sea. Riser pipe. And connect it to a larger pipe that would bring the oil to ships on the surface. This is a dangerous move because if they cut the pipe and something goes wrong, what could possibly go wrong? At a depth of 5,000 feet, a lot can go wrong. If something goes wrong, the oil flow rate, the flow rate, will have been increased because it's a bigger pipe and more oil will end up in the sea. Next, the junk shot and the cement. Also on the table is what's called a junk shot. This would involve injecting solid, rubbery, and fibrous materials into the broken mechanism at the wellhead to stop it up temporarily, like a clogged toilet. The temporary clog would allow engineers time to use heavy fluids and cement to create a more permanent barrier. This isn't certain to work either, but unlike cutting the riser, at least it doesn't work the flow of, if it doesn't work, the flow of oil won't have been increased. All right, a little bit more when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to Tony and Maine's report. Sort of a compendium of reports from non-mainstream media, non-corporate media in this country. The last one here, state officials in Louisiana announced another set of fishing closures as the oil spill from this disaster spreads and approaches state shores. The commercial and recreation fishing closure now includes an area of the state's territorial sea west of the Mississippi River, as well as the beaches that border any of the closed areas, blah, blah, blah. And there's some geographic stuff here. Tony in Maine says, that's about it for now. It's becoming harder and harder to find stories that don't include the corporate spin. Tony in Maine. And he added a P.S. with this. He says, you spoke briefly about the meeting that took place today with the executives of BP Transocean and Halliburton before senators. Well, when you see these three international corporations throw each other under the bus, it just tells me that this is far worse than what is being told us. You do realize that they're throwing Dick Cheney's baby, Halliburton, under the bus. You would think these three would have gotten their stories straight before appearing before the Senate committee, but it appears that didn't happen, which probably means the scope of this disaster is going to be far worse than any of us realize. As far as your emailer, who objected to the term volcano when describing this gusher, well, I'd much rather hear that term than the one that is being used in the corporate media, which is oil spill. The term oil spill is just one example of how the media are underplaying the magnitude of this story. Another example is how they continue to use the 210,000 gallons of oil flowing into the Gulf each day. I know I read something last week where BP execs were at a closed-door meeting in Washington, said this number was much higher, yet the corporate media still used the 210,000-gallon-a-day stat. Yeah. Getting scared yet, truth seekers? I sure am. I try not to panic. And from McClatchy Newspapers, BP America said it would take another 75 days to finish one of these two relief wells it's drilling parallel to shut down the flow. By then, if the spill doesn't worsen, and the relief well stops the leak, some 20 million gallons of oil will be swirling into the Gulf, nearly double the Exxon Valdez spill in 1989. A professor of oceanography at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography at La Jolla, California said, quote, it's going to be unbelievably bad. This is a problem that won't go away for a decade. Good God. And further, whatever happens in the Gulf could spread. Scientists say they can't predict more than a few days in advance where the oil is heading. If it slips into the powerful loop current, it could spread toward South Florida, get picked up by the Gulf Stream, and head up the East Coast before it turns at Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, toward the open sea. Of course, that would prove disastrous for Florida's tourism industry. Yeah, really. With 80 million visitors drawn yearly to its pristine beaches. damage to the wetlands could cost society billions of dollars in lost natural filtration of water and protection of property from storm surges. The coastal areas also are important habitat for birds, shrimp, and many other forms of life. There's still hope that a new strategy will work. BP failed over the weekend to get that 78-ton cone over the leaking pipe. This week it plans to try what's been called a top hat, a smaller device treated with hot water and a solvent that would capture the oil so that it could be pumped to a barge. And, of course, the other possibility is the junk shot. Jackson, he's the guy, Jeremy Jackson, the professor of oceanography at the Scripps Institute, said he saw up close what can happen when oil hits a coastline like this. He was in charge of the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute in Panama in 1986 when a tank ruptured at a refinery dumping oil on the Caribbean coast. He said what we learned was never, ever let oil get into a mangrove coast. You'll never get it out. It's like a sponge you rub on a greasy bacon pan. You need very hot water and a lot of soap, and you still might just give up and throw away the sponge. The Gulf's coastal seagrass beds and mangroves are full of burrowing animals that make millions of holes. Oil works its way out of the holes eventually, and then storms flush it back into the water, creating what amounts to a new spill. Senator Bill Nelson of Florida, an opponent of offshore drilling, said it would be his worst nightmare if the oil flowed for nearly 3 months more until the relief was complete. Nelson said, quote, it's going to cover up the Gulf Coast, and the wind is eventually going to keep it going south, and it's going to get into the loop current. And the loop current comes south and comes through the Florida Keys, where 85% of the live coral reefs in this country are located. He added, we're talking about massive economic loss to our tourism, our beaches, our fisheries, and very possibly the disruption of our country's military testing and training in the Eastern Gulf. Oh, that would be terrible, wouldn't it? Another concern is the possibility that the spill will get much worse. If the wellhead gave way entirely, the amount of oil would increase greatly, said Larry McKinney, director of the Heart Research Institute for Gulf of Mexico Studies at Texas A&M. McKinney said when storms blow up, the oil will be driven, the hurricane will drive it into the marshes, and then the problem will build up more and more because you just can't stop it. He said, we've never been in a wetland situation like this before. I know, you don't like to hear this, and you may have abandoned the program. If you're gone, you're gone. But when I see how corporate media in the United States is treating this story, I think in today's New York Times, it was on page A7, I think. I don't think I saw it until page A7. Television broadcast news, over-the-air news. I know ABC and NBC did this. It was deep into their story. They had to cover other things first until they got to this. And I can't think of anything, any story, any event that is more critical and carries with it potential for a greater disaster, with the exception of global climate change, than this event. And I think corporate media, or media in general, have a responsibility to be letting us know what's going on. And if BP insists on continuing to manage the reports coming out, I think something ought to be done about that. I mean, does BP own America? Oh, excuse me. Why am I asking that question? The oil industry, of course it owns America. The oil industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the Frankenfood industry, the communications industry, So what's the point in worrying about it, right? I mean, worrying about reports. We're never going to get reports. All right, during this break, we're going to open up the phones in about a minute and a half and get your comments. Scott writes, Mike, this may be old news to you, but I learned from MSNBC tonight that spineless Democrat Senator Mary Landrieu has received $1.7 million in campaign contributions from BP over the past 10 years. She had the balls to argue, quote, that we can't afford to lose jobs, end quote, over care for the environment. Why should I be surprised? Mike, it's over. We're cooked somewhere between deep fried and tempura. Scott from Golden Rose Records. From J.J. Jingleheimer Schmidt. Hi, True Seekers, and hi to you, Mike. Love your show. The spill sucks. Always knew corporations would destroy the planet. Now we know which one screwed us. BP. They were pointing they were playing the blame game at one another today, but not a word about what the spill could do to the planet. Money rules. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break here. We shall return. And if you would like to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling. Like their father or their dog just died.
Cavalry! Get him out!
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue. Blessed days, dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Yeah, that song is has an added poignancy now to it, doesn't it? It is nine before the hour on the Malloy program. Sorry about the voice failing again. The residue of this damn bronchitis. If you've had bronchitis this spring, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Len is in New York listening online. Len, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Although I've been bummed out, I've been trying to point out how bad this oil spill is to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Am I coming through okay?
Yeah, great.
Oh, good. You know, the right wing that you were talking about, by the way, Austrian economics, everybody, that's the Ron Paul, we should get back to the gold standard concept.
Oh, is that what that means?
Yeah, and, you know, the irony is, I mean, gold hit a new high today in the process of everybody freaking out, not knowing how many shekels are going to be printed in this world trying to keep prop up the economies.
Well, we don't have any gold in this country to back the money anyway, do we?
Well, no, that's the point. I mean, really? That's why gold keeps going up, because the percentage of... I mean, I'm 56. It took me until about a year and a half ago to learn that regardless of what I say or what you say or what anybody says, gold is money,
mm-hmm.
because people consider it money.
Right.
And the value of it is sort of it swings wildly, but it goes up in relation to the amount of currency.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if I printed, $1 trillion in my basement over here, then the dollars would be worth less, and gold goes up somewhat proportionally
mm-hmm.
over time. But, you know, I have a friend, and he's honestly a friend down the block, who's a right-winger, he's not a teabag guy, but, he's a right winger and listens to Mark Levin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I say, oh, this is where you got your information. He goes, oh, I listen to the other side, too. I said, like what? And he goes, the New York Times.
Oh, my God.
And this is what we're facing. You know, that guy Bennett in
Utah. Right.
That is just one of the first. This is, I would say that the way things are going right now, the likelihood of Democrats losing both houses is probably 60 or 70%, because as bad as those nut jobs are in some opportunities like that, the number of Democrats that are going to stay home by this uninspiring president in an off year when they're not even going to go out to vote for him is going to end up just resulting in elections that we're not going to win. And, you know, Randy Rose was asking what, you know, the big gripe about Obama was. And the reality is, you know, that he has not communicated any sense of urgency whatsoever, the way FDR, for example, did. And, you know, part of its timing, because FDR came in after a couple of years where people actually felt the pain. They knew the pain had nothing to do with him.
Right.
So when he started ranting, you know, they felt, okay, somebody may have a handle on this.
Mm-hmm.
Obama hasn't had, you know, he came in right in the middle of the downturn. So within a couple of months, like you say, how stupid people are in this country, they're going to forget the fact that this place was completely broken before he walked in. And he's not doing enough to, you know, to turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not doing enough. He's not supporting, you know, the logical chain of events that would turn it around. So that's why gold's going up. And the lunacy of it all is that everybody advertising gold on TV and radio is going to be right. Gold is going to go to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 an ounce before this is over.
What's going to happen with the oil spill?
Well, not being a geologist,
I ran to Costco.
We don't, you know, you remember I'm kosher.
Right, right.
I don't eat shellfish.
Right.
But I figure that there's going to be so much polluted seafood that it's going to send the price of what I do eat up. So I stocked up on a ton of salmon, frozen and canned. Because I sincerely believe,
well,
I mean, you might be able to go boating down there in 6 months,
but I don't think
you're going to want to eat anything.
Right, Len, I didn't mean exactly that. I mean, what are you doing to stock up your canned salmon supply? I just mean, what do you think is going to happen with the scope of this disaster?
Well, I think we're going to end up like third world countries actually putting in those remote echo things on wells that we drill in the future.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it might end. My biggest concern is, well, it's not really a concern because Democrats think they have an intelligent idea with this cap and trade stuff. And cap and trade is about the stupidest way of going about trying to curtail carbon emissions.
Sure.
Because it's so convoluted. And, you know, when the Democrats lose more seats, it's not going to happen. What I think is going to happen is I'm going to kick myself. I ended up getting a couple of vehicles this year that only get about, on average, 25 miles to a gallon. And I should have gotten a Prius.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, not only are there going to be a lot of people kicking themselves, but those 25 mile a gallon vehicles, at some point you may have to melt them down and, you know, convert them into bullets. Hey, thanks, Len. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. We'll be back, after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Beck. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. We have an open line here if you want to join in. 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. I'm waiting for some Republican or teabag bastard to call in here and try to tell me that, I don't know, this is Obama's fault. Or there's another side to this story. Scumsuckers. Robert is in Redwood City, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Robert.
Good evening, Mike. Hey, I was just hearing that there's a $500,000 sonic valve that, with a transducer that's down on the ocean floor that the people in the North Sea used on their drill rigs and could be on all of them, but they cost $500,000. So
right.
They were saying it cost too much. So what are they up about $40 million in expense now? The thing is, these guys that run the oil business are arrogant, ignorant chauvinists. Look at Dick Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Zbigniew Brzezinski in 97 wrote a book called The Grand Chessboard, and in it, three times this phrase appears. Catastrophe on the order of Pearl Harbor needs to occur within the United States in order to galvanize the American people into imperial mobilization, democracy being inimical to imperialism. And if you read that book, the whole point is gain control over labor markets and resources.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want to push this petrochemical paradigm as far as it can go. They don't care what happens. And sooner or later, we're going to have to wake up and realize that it's our survival. And we're going to have to get these guys with a scruff of the necks and do whatever needs to be done.
Well, I hear you, Robert, and I certainly understand what you're saying. I don't know if the American people have the courage to do what it would take. If courage is the right word, maybe it's just, I wonder if the American people have the understanding of what it would take. You know, to 40 or 50% of the American public, the answer is very simple. Just cut taxes on the wealthy and everything will be okay. You know, the crazy people who seem to be in such an abundance right now. Yeah, I got to move on. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate what you had to say. Till is in Austin, Texas, listening online. Hey, Till.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Well, not to turn things around on Obama, but I've got a suggestion for his book when he writes his memoirs about his term in office.
Yeah?
How I Learned to Lie Like a Republican.
Or How I Learned to Govern Like a Republican.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if Kucinich had not been summarily dismissed by the press in 2008, I think he would be our president right now. And, they always tell us, you know, that we got to vote for the lesser of evils, that, you know, if we don't go along with it, then the Republican's going to win. Well, I think this time we ought to say, well, you know, let's turn it around. We're voting for Kucinich, you know, or not. I mean, or nothing. You know, that's the way we're going to vote. If you don't want President Palin, then you'll vote for Kucinich along with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
In my fantasy world.
It is a fantasy world because the press would murder him. They would absolutely kill him, kill Kucinich, because he's too radical. He's too much of an apple cart upsetter. And he speaks too much truth. And this country is not, it never was based on truth, but it certainly is not based on truth now.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I truly think what we're seeing is the end of empire. And the end of the experiment that the framers put together 237 years ago, it's just clunking to an end. It pisses me off, though. It had happened in my lifetime.
Yeah,
you know
exactly
what I'm saying?
Right. I agree.
Because I used to really believe in, before I realized what the game was, I used to believe in what we were doing in this
country.
Well,
you know, it's one thing. If a meteorite hits us, that's kind of out of our control.
Right.
But we're bringing this on ourselves.
Well, sure we are. Yeah. Yeah, people smarter than me, I don't know, maybe wiser than you too, said a long time ago that this country will fail from within. We're not going to be defeated by some external enemy. We're going to eat ourselves alive.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's exactly that prophecy is being fulfilled.
What we're doing.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Till. I appreciate you checking in. Take care, man. Take care. That's the part that to me is just so infuriating. Is that we have allowed, we being rational, reasonable people, and I don't care what your political persuasion is, I'm talking about rational, reasonable people, And at one time they even existed in the Republican Party. They may still, but they're very silent. I think they're dumbfounded about what has happened to their political party. But rational, reasonable people who do exist, still exist in this country, have apparently just decided that, you know, game over. There is no point in continuing to operate under the assumption that things are going to improve, things are going to get better. This oil disaster, I think, is just one more manifestation. The same way that the invasion of Iraq, it's just one more manifestation. The response to Katrina, there it is again. The invasion of Afghanistan, the continuing presence of U.S. troops in Afghanistan, is another manifestation. The collapse of our economy, the Republicans in the Clinton administration and Bill Clinton, sending all the jobs out of this country with NAFTA. I mean, it's just one event after another that is a clear indication that at some point a big chunk of the collective consciousness in this country decided to commit political suicide. To just say, okay, the experiment's over. Let's just rip this country apart. Let's destroy everything that we've spent two centuries trying to build. Let's get rid of whatever little attempts we've had recently. I mean, within the last 50 years of trying to seek justice, trying to develop some sort of honesty. It's just being beaten to a bloody pulp. And I think it wasn't Bush and Cheney who started it, but they certainly have had a powerful effect on the destruction of this country the last 8 years. Obama is, he's not, to me, he's not even worth commenting on as far as what's happening in the country. Sure, he's a corporatist. Sure, he's out of the University of Chicago School of Economics and School of Everything. Sure, his nominee here, Elena Kagan for the Supreme Court, is just another right-wing puppet parrot for corporate America. Sure. But the only reason that's shocking is because of what those of us who voted for him decided to the way we decided to define him during the campaign. We never should have done that. But after 8 years of Bush and Cheney, a Catholic priest who had not molested children probably would have been a good choice for president after Bush and Cheney. Catholic priests who had not molested children. Okay, there might be a few left. So here we are. The country is unraveling. There's no question. And there were people like Grover Norquist who said 20 years ago that he wanted to reduce government to the size where it fit in a bathtub and then drown it. I mean, these are people. When you say reduce government and then kill it, you're talking about killing the country. You're talking about killing the United States of America. And that's what this son of a bitch declared 20 years ago. And he's gotten all kinds of help now. There are so many people. The teabag freaks are the leading vanguard of the people who do not like the United States. They have never liked the United States. Democracy is just not something that they're comfortable with. They want a dictator. They want a daddy. They don't want the messiness of democracy. They don't want to see women voting. They don't want to see women controlling their own bodies. They don't want to see anyone having the right to form a marriage contract. None of that. Republicans, right-wingers, they're cowardly sons of bitches who would do anything and have done anything to destroy the country. So what we're seeing is the whole thing unraveling. I don't know how else to put it. We'll be right back.
The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, I you don't believe.
Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. The one thing that still, you know, puzzles me about why Republicans and fundamentalist Christians and fundamentalist Muslims and right-wingers in general, why do they want to murder the earth? Why do they want to destroy our experiment here with representative government? Why have the Muslims allowed their leadership to take them into the, or keep them in the 14th century? I don't get the benefit. If these religious nutcases were living some kind of a truly godly existence, you know, according to the way I've read about what their God demands of them, which is, complete servitude. If they were living in a manner that their avatars have tried to tell them how to live, you know, with justice and love and peace, you know, the New Testament and the Quran are not books of death and destruction and war. The Jews more or less own that from, you know, in the so-called Old Testament. Their God, it's all the same God, but I mean, yeah, apparently this God of the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims changed somehow. You know, back in the day, he was just this selfish, narcissistic, murderous son of a bitch who would kill anybody and anything. And then the Christians and Muslims came along and changed him. You know, which they have a right to do since they and, you know, all these people invented this nonsense. But I don't understand if they're going to go to the trouble of developing over two millennia almost a religion with all the attendant baggage that goes with that, you know, spirits and saints and you know, a whole pantheon of angels and if they're going to do that, go to all that trouble, why not show a little respect for what is, according to them, their God's creation? You know, the earth. Or the attempt to find justice or mercy. That's the part I can't understand. And it's the one thing that leads me to believe that anyone who is a believer in religion is essentially crazy, is essentially just mad, you know, insane. How can you not be insane if you believe this stuff? So, and then live the way they live. What religious leader, somebody tell me, maybe it's happened, what religious leader has been screaming about what has gone on now in the Gulf with this gusher of oil? Has any, I haven't seen it. Has any, rabbi with power or priest or archbishop or minister or, you know, come out and fully condemn this, fully taken a stand and taken the position that this is a result of human greed and human disrespect, and, you know, just all those deadly sins, lust, and not necessarily sexual lust, but the lust for things, you know, and the greed and the avarice I haven't heard. Does anybody know? Has any religious leader? It doesn't have to be anywhere except here in the United States. Has any religious leader really come out? How about Michael Lerner? Maybe he has. But other than that, where are the Christian fundamentalists? Where has Franklin Graham condemned this? you know, he's so busy condemning Islam. Has Hagee, Pastor Hagee, has he said anything? Has anybody said anything? As far as I know, they have not. Which, once again, puts the lie to everything that they say they stand for. They hate their God's creation. They hate their God. I think, frankly, they hate their God. They're sick of doing what everything the psychopathic sky being tells them to do. They're tired of it, you know. They want to go get drunk or get laid or gamble or run around or hang out with witches or dance in the moonlight or, you know, smoke a doobie. And they're terrified that their God will say, and then you're going to die and go to hell. So maybe they're getting a little pissed off. They're mad at their God. They're mad at the planet. I just wish you people would go, you know, leave the rest of us alone. Could you do that? Hey, we'll be back. Stay with us.
Tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
How much he hates these people. Kind of funny. That used to be kind of funny. As he mentioned yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's not funny anymore. It's not funny at all. Matt is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I couldn't agree with you more. The miracle of Christianity is that anyone believes it.
Yeah,
but you were talking about the, of course, the oil spill earlier. That's when I called. I don't mean to change the subject, but you know, I used to drive through Louisiana and Florida and Alabama. I always wondered, as I looked out there, who is getting the revenue from these enormously profitable operations? What, $6 billion in one quarter?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, these red states are some of the poorest states in the nation.
Yeah.
I mean, rhetorical question, I guess, but where is
well, that's what makes the argument by the right wingers about we've got to drill more. It's American oil for you know, keep it in America. It's
going out. They're selling it on the open market.
Yeah, it's such an asinine point of view, and the rednecks all buy it. The rednecks and the teabaggers all buy into. Oh yeah, we can have oil. Let's drill. And they're so ignorant. They don't understand that any oil. I don't care where it's found. I don't care if it's found in some teabagger's basement. It goes on the market.
Is it in our coastal waters or the territorial waters of the states? I mean, maybe you don't know. I just always wondered about that. Nigeria, you know, why don't they just take them over?
Well, the I don't know. The coastal waters, the territorial waters belong to the United States. The feds set the limit. I think there's a 200-mile limit. There used to be a 12-mile limit, but I think it's been extended to 200 miles because we are so depleting fishing resources. So humans are. So it's been extended to 200 miles, I think. As far as drilling rights, that's up to the federal government to grant. The government then gets a piece of the action. That's what makes this thing so much like a bunch of, no offense to sex workers, a bunch of whores sitting around deciding how they're going to carve up the next John that comes through the door. Because the same agencies that are supposed to be regulating this filthy, disgusting industry also make money. So the incentive is to grant the leases. The incentive is not to say, no, we're not going to do this, and we're going to crack down, we're going to make sure you do it right, which may inhibit how much oil you pump, but you're going to do it right so you don't destroy the planet. It's madness. This is madness.
It is madness, and they live in poverty, they don't get the revenues, and they,
no.
You know, now their livelihoods are destroyed. Anyway, well, thanks for the lesson. I guess that's
all right.
Wondered.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, when you take a look at you know, the refinery workers, there are refinery workers in some of these Gulf states, New Orleans especially. I'm sorry, Louisiana especially, and some of them make a fairly decent wage. If you consider though what they're paid vis-a-vis how their lives are at risk every time they go to work, maybe it's not such good pay after all. It's kind of like the coal mining industry, another filthy, dirty industry where people get paid for digging the stuff out of the ground. And yet they don't, you know, the workers don't have a share of this. They get an hourly wage if they get that. Maybe some kind of a fixed amount. But yes, absolutely. Here in the South, I've seen this for the past 40, 45 years in the South, where you would think, especially with oil and Appalachia with the coal, when you think of American poverty, what's the first word that pops into your mind? If you're of a certain age, it's Appalachia. And it's been that way since LBJ, and it's still that way. As far as oil, yeah, Americans, we don't get any. What do we get for that? A certain percentage of what is brought up and refined, or maybe not even refined. Oh, sure, we get gasoline tax, but the taxes that we charge on oil products, the oil could be coming from Nigeria, it could be coming from Venezuela. You know, this whole idea of, yeah, we got to drill, baby, drill, because we got to free ourselves of foreign oil. Who came up with this? Who came up with that massively fraudulent idea? Oil that's drilled in the Gulf of Mexico does not go. It goes to the United States in some instances to be refined. Then where does it go? It depends on who buys it. Oh, God. You know, what's the point? What's the point? There is no point. Bill is in Minnesota. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
What you were discussing about the religion before the break, I had a nice long conversation with Bob Alexander today. I buy his coffee, and of course, that e-cig, which works wonderfully. He's such a wonderful, wonderfully honest man. And it was really a pleasure to talk to him.
Well, that's nice. You know, Friday night we're going to have the third of his dissertations on stopping smoking with these e-cigs. I just got an email from him tonight. So Friday night, listen for that.
Okay. I am the bowling machine mechanic. Remember me?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We've talked about how I used to set pins when I was a kid.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Just one quick thing. I just when you were here for the Blue State Bash, I think you might have got the feeling that this, at least the Minneapolis area, is not all that blue. It'll be the big business that's here. But
You do have Michelle Bachmann.
Oh yeah, I told
you did. You did.
I worked one county over from her, and yeah, I have to deal with those Republican knuckleheads, and keep my mouth shut so I don't lose my job. You know?
But I've found that the progressives or the Democrats from Minnesota, in the current configuration, and years ago, you know, when you guys declare yourselves to be a Democrat or progressive, you really are. You're not like a progressive, say, from or a Democrat from Pennsylvania. No offense to listeners in Pennsylvania, but you know, progressives and Democrats in Minnesota are really progressives and Democrats. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. And thank you very much, and I'll talk to you again.
All right. Take care. Appreciate you checking in, Bill. Angus. Angus is in Phoenix, listening on XM. Hey, Angus.
Hey, just calling you from the land of crazies out here. But I got a buddy that I talked to, I went to college with in Chicago, and this thing with the Gulf, you know, like your caller made a point a couple of weeks back, they're never going to cap this. They're not going to be able to do it. And the real estate values that are going to plummet in Florida alone, you know, when you say what's it going to get through to these red staters, that's going to be one of them, is hitting them in their pocketbook. And I really think between that and the fact that this only that is eventually going to pool up to fill the entire Gulf of Mexico, I wonder if this could create a Category 6 hurricane.
Well,
this oily water could get even hotter, could it not?
I don't know about that, but I do know that if this thing doesn't stop, this could pollute every single ocean on Earth as if there were some dividing line separating all these seven seas, which there is not. But you know, once that happens, this is the part that drives me insane. I don't understand why this country and every country on Earth has not tossed every single resource it has at stopping this gusher. Because every single country on Earth, if this is not stopped, is going to be affected to the point where affected. That's like saying that somebody who has lung cancer has COPD. He said as he cleared his throat. That's the part I don't get. This is an extinction level event. If it continues, if it goes on, if it is not stopped, if the hole is not plugged, If this gusher of oil is not choked off, the whole planet ends. And I don't get this. I don't get this. Oh God, this kind of passive, like, oh yeah, well, let's go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner tonight. Or thanks, Angus. I think I made before the break, the possibility, really, of, you know, a Busta Rhymes extinction level event here because of this, excuse me, because of the hole that BP has punched into the Earth's crust 5,000 feet below the sea. And because it carries with it the potential, a real potential to if not end life as we know it, certainly disrupt the entire planet. Since that's a given, why are there not scientists and engineers and cleanup crews from every country on Earth? Well, the answer, the quick answer is because they don't care either. If you can't motivate people about global climate change, if they have the evidence in their own countries, you know, glaciers that are melting, desertification that is going on because of changing weather patterns, flooded coastal areas, islands that are disappearing, monster storms. I mean, all of this stuff is occurring. And I don't care how these flying monkey right-wingers or the teabag bastards or conservatives or Republicans, I don't care how they spin it. It's happening. And these dumb bastards that wander around in their camo outfits in the woods in Michigan or the real crazy ones who follow Glenn Beck, I love Glenn Beck, or who waste their lives listening to Rush Limbaugh. I don't get this. I really don't. And I think to myself, look, I'm pretty comfortable with my intelligence level. I'm not the brightest bulb in the marquee. I'm damn sure not the dimmest, but I'm not the brightest. And if I get this, and this has nothing to do, or it shouldn't anyway, with what political party or what candidate I vote for, or whether or not I think gay folk ought to be able to get married. This is the survival of the whole freaking planet at stake here. And rather than help, rather than discuss, try to figure out, use 60,000 years of collected human intelligence to try to solve this issue of global climate change and this issue of a hole punched in the floor of the ocean that is spewing hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil. Do people around the world, it's like the U.S., it's like the teabaggers and their scummy fellow travelers in this country. Well, global warming, that's not going to affect me. That's happening over in the Mongolian desert or something. It ain't going to affect me. Damn, did you see all that snow this winter? You know, they are so ignorant and so stupid. Is everybody on the planet that ignorant and stupid? Do we have... I mean, aren't there engineers and geologists around the Earth that are talking with their counterparts in the United States and their counterparts here? Aren't they saying, look, this is a major, major, horrific event. And it's going to affect you if we don't get this thing stopped. I mean, is nobody talking? Is nobody paying any attention at all? I mean, I expect half the people in the United States to be these dumb ass, ridiculously ignorant right wingers, these Republicans, the teabag jerks, you know, the people who have been eating Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck all these years. They are beyond any kind of they can't be reached. And yet they're going to die, too, and so are their children and their grandchildren. I mean, this is not, I mean, Jesus is not going to rapture these sick bastards up into heaven. He really isn't. It's not going to happen, boys. I'm telling you. You know, if you want to listen to Sarah Palin, if you want to go to raptureready.com and get your hair done so you can go meet, it's not going to happen. You're going to die in your own swill, just like the rest of us. So, since that's a given, why isn't everybody on Earth that knows about this doing something about it. I'm talking about the global climate change, but now I'm also talking about this latest example of how we are hell-bent on global suicide. This hole punched in the floor of the ocean. How did we get this stupid?
Well, Mike, it'll all be solved if we just give another tax cut to the rich. I mean, damn, you know, you liberals, you just want more Social Security and stuff, you dummy.
I can't handle that. I really can't. I can't handle that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Maybe. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.